I searched the comlog records and confirmed what I suspected. In more than 16,000 known human societies, none are listed where there are no individual names at all. Even in the Lussis hive societies, individuals respond to their class category followed by a simple code. I tell them my name and they stare. Father Paul Doré. Father Paul Doré. Repeats the comlog translator, but there is no attempt at even simple repetition. Except for their mass disappearances each day before sunset, and their common 2-hour sleep time, they do very little as a group. Even their lodging arrangements appear random. Al will spend one nap time with Betty, the next with Gam, and the third with Zelda or Pete. No system or schedule is apparent. Every third day, the entire group of 70 goes into the forest to forage and returns with berries, chalma roots and bark, fruit, and whatever else might be edible. I was sure they were vegetarians until I saw Del munching on the cold corpse of an infant arboreal. The little primate must have fallen from the high branches. It seems then that the 70 do not disdain meat. They simply are too stupid to hunt and kill it. When the Bikura are thirsty, they walk almost 300 meters to a stream that cascades into the cleft. In spite of this inconvenience, there are no signs of water skins, jugs, or any type of pottery. I keep my reserve of water in 10-gallon plastic containers, but the villagers take no notice. In my plummeting respect for these people, I do not find it unlikely that they have spent generations in a village with no handy water source. "Who built the houses?" I ask. They have no word for village. "The 70, responds Will. I can tell him from the others only by a broken finger that did not mend well. Each of them has at least one such distinguishing feature, although sometimes I think it would be easier to tell crows apart. "When did they build them?" I ask, although I should know by now that any question that starts with "when" will not receive an answer. I receive no answer. They do go into the cleft each evening, down the vines. On the third evening, I tried to observe this exodus, but 6 of them turned me back from the edge and gently but persistently brought me back to my hut. It was the first observable action of the Bikura that had hinted at aggression, and I sat in some apprehension after they had gone. The next evening as they departed, I went quietly to my hut, not even peering out. But after they returned, I retrieved the imager and its tripod from where I had left them near the edge. The timer had worked perfectly. The hollows showed the Bikura grabbing the vines and scrambling down the cliff face as nimbly as the little arboreals that fill the chalma and werewood forests. Then they disappeared under the overhang. "What do you do when you go down the cliff each evening?" I asked Al the next day. The native looked at me with the seraphic Buddha smile I have learned to hate. "You belong to the cruciform," he said, as if that answered everything. "Do you worship when you go down the cliff?" I asked. No answer. I thought a minute. "I also follow the cross," I said, knowing that it would be translated as "belong to the cruciform." Any day now I will not need the translator program, but this conversation was too important to leave to chance. "Does this mean that I should join you when you go down the cliff face?" For a second I thought that Al was thinking. His brow furrowed, and I realized that it was the first time that I had seen one of the 70 come close to frowning. Then he said, "You cannot. You belong to the cruciform, but you are not of the 70. I realized that it had taken every neuron and synapse in his brain to frame that distinction. "What would you do if I did go down the cliff face?" I asked, expecting no response. hypothetical questions almost always had as much luck as my time-based queries. This time he did respond. The seraphic smile and untroubled countenance returned, and Alpha said softly, "If you try to go down the cliff, we will hold you down on the grass, take sharpened stones, cut your throat, and wait until your blood stops flowing and your heart stops beating." I said nothing. I wondered if he could hear the pounding of my heart at that moment. "Well," I thought, "at least you don't have to worry any longer that they think you are a god."